The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102 103.
Let's talk to my next guest because they are just back from their holidays in Europe. Not an unusual thing about going on holidays in the summer months, but Melissa Welsh decided to go on her own, something that I'm sure you might have thought about from time to time. And I know myself from travelling on my own, it is quite the decision to make, especially as a woman. And it's annoying to say that, but that's what we have to think about. So Melissa joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning to tell us all. You're very welcome, Melissa.
Thank you. Yes, at the tender age of 41, I decided to travel solo for the first time.
It's daunting though, isn't it? You think, like, I was away recently and really enjoyed, like, I was away with loads of people, but I really did think, wow, why didn't I do more travelling on my own when I was much younger, like in college? But it's because I didn't have the safety of a phone and the internet.
Yeah.
And if anything goes wrong, you can contact people. Like, I lived in the States on my own and things went wrong. Wow. And I was in trouble because things went wrong because I had no support. Mm. Whereas the phone helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I didn't travel at all when I was younger.
Okay.
Like, that's something I completely missed out on. I literally, like, just worked, like, went out. That was my life for like 20 years. I missed the whole travel thing. Barely went anywhere. I've literally been on a handful of sun holidays. That's it.
Okay.
And the last holiday I went on before this was actually like 8 years ago.
Wow.
So okay. I hadn't been on a plane in 8 years. Now, in between, in fairness, I did a lot. I bought a house myself. I did a lot of stuff in between. And obviously there was COVID and stuff. So it was just always on the back burner. But it was always something I wanted to do. And then I was kind of like, at my age, like, I have very good friends and stuff, but everyone's married with children or they have their own stuff going on. And I was kind of on Instagram and you start following girls who are traveling solo and, like, they're young and they're, you know, they're having a ball. And it's just like, why aren't I considering this for myself? So I didn't even have a passport, Orla. I had to get a brand new one. Mine was so far out of date. I had to send off the birth cert and everything to get a passport. Then I bought a suitcase. It was like baby steps. And at Christmas then, my family were just fed up listening to me. And they were like, book a holiday.
Oh, so
just
it took that long. Okay. All right.
Yeah, yeah. So in December, I actually booked it. So to say it was the longest running build up to a holiday.
But I really think that's fair enough, Melissa. And, like, fair play to you for doing it because it is so daunting. And what I loved from your Instagram stories when you were on holidays, because what I really found from doing things on my own, that nighttime was such an issue because you didn't want to go for dinner on your own. You didn't want to go for drinks on your own. But you really embraced it, didn't you?
I've never sat in a pub in Ireland on my own and had a drink ever that I can recall. You know, and, you know, I've had lunch maybe on my own.
Yeah.
But I can't recall ever going to a restaurant in the evening unless I've had to stay in a hotel somewhere or something.
Exactly.
Something.
We should actually tell people where you decided to go to start with.
Yeah, I decided on Rhodes in Greece.
Lovely.
And there's a couple of reasons. I was in Crete 25 years ago on a very different holiday when I was 16, but I remember liking Greece. Also Shirley Valentine. She's my inspiration. Shirley Valentine went to Greece. I was like, I'm going to Greece. I'm going to sit in a Greek taverna on my own and be happy with my life. And just, I wanted the heat. I wanted nearly guaranteed heat because obviously I never get it because I never go on holidays.
Mm.
So there were a couple of reasons. And just all the reviews, everything. I joined a few Facebook pages for Rhodes Travelers and solo holidays. And Falaraki is where I ended up going.
Mm-hmm.
And I really did my research and Google things you could go and see. And everything just looks so beautiful there. So I booked it.
Okay.
And you could fly from Cork. Sorry, that was another big
thing. Brilliant, which is great when you're from West Waterford.
Because I was terrified to face Dublin on my own. I couldn't have done it. And I'm not even ashamed to say that. I'm a child. I knew I was going to be like a lost sheep in the airport. So to face Dublin airport would have been way too daunting.
Yeah. Now, apart from the airport,
Cork,
what else did you worry about?
Like you said, going out in the evenings on my own. And it wasn't like that I was scared of, like, you know, being attacked or anything. Like, it wasn't that. It was just the daunting thing of sitting somewhere on your own.
Mm-hmm.
I was never really had the fear. I suppose I'm kind of on my own so long that, like, nothing kind of phases me on my own. I go walking all the time on my own. I go here, there and everywhere on my own. Like, I never let myself be fearful.
Good.
Because I don't want to live my life like
of
that.
Course.
And I don't think anyone should.
Yeah.
But obviously people were like, oh, what, are you mad going on your own?
And, I suppose we do have to think a bit about the safety aspect of it. But we have ways to do that these days.
Now I'd heard the Greek men, they could be flirtatious, but they take no for an answer.
Well, that's good.
And like obviously people were kind of talking about the same thing in the solo pages, you know, and I would say that. And everyone was saying how nice the Greek people were. You know, they don't put in or out with you. Obviously, there's other countries you may have issues where they just won't kind of leave you alone. But Greek kind of came highly recommended for a safe place to go. And it really, really was. I did not feel, you know, unsafe once there.
Brilliant.
As I said, the only thing rustling in the bushes were the stray cats.
Okay, good stuff.
And so there were lots of those.
From day one, were you delighted you did this?
Yeah, even and when I went to the airport, it was like, right, okay, I'm here, get this done. Okay, I found my gate, I found where I was supposed to go. I was there nice and early, you know. Getting on the plane and stuff on my own, I did feel a little bit of a pleb. You can't help it, you know. I was sitting beside a couple that were going on their honeymoon. Oh, of course I was.
It was like the universe telling you something. Yeah,
they were. I know they were a gorgeous young couple. Like, so we had the chats and it was lovely, you know. So when I got there, then it was late at night and I was kind of like, oh God, I got to the hotel. It couldn't have been nicer. They made me some food. I got to the room and I was just like, okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
Literally, like the next day I was like, go to the beach. I didn't plan for the next day. I did plan ahead a lot of activities.
Okay.
That's another thing I would give a tip for.
Okay.
But the first day I had nothing. I just went to the beach. I went and sussed out the area, how far I was from everything. I wanted to see where I was catching a boat the next day. So I sussed all of that out. Then I just relaxed on the beach for most of the day. Then the first evening there was a restaurant actually recommended to me on Facebook. I went there and the girl couldn't have been nicer and more welcoming. An English girl runs the restaurant. So they were just so lovely. Like everyone was really, really nice. So I took it handy. Off I went on my little boat trip then the next day. And I saw literally the most beautiful views I've ever seen in my life.
Wow, okay.
I climbed up to an Acropolis in 34 degree heat.
Wow.
And I'm a fit person, but my God, it nearly broke me. But the views, it's Lindos is the name of the place in Rhodes. And it absolutely took my, I was nearly crying. Like a few times the whole thing brought a tear to my eye that I was actually there. I was doing it. I was seeing these amazing places. So that went really well. And that was the first thing. The second day then I had another boat trip.
So you kept yourself busy.
Yeah, the first couple of days I did all the touristy stuff. My two boat trips went off and saw beautiful places, different islands. We had a swimming stop another day in a beautiful bay. And oh my God, it was otherworldly for me. And then I went, just got a bus then into Lindos town, or sorry, not Lindos, Rhodes town.
Lovely.
And there's an old town there. And oh my God, absolutely. Everything is just so stunning there.
And at
everything
this stage, had
beautiful.
You met other people that were doing solo holidays? Or?
Not really. No, okay. Not at that stage. I bumped into one or two actually, you know, and we had the chats and we took photos for each other and things like that, just in passing. But through Facebook, I had actually arranged to meet a couple of girls who were also traveling solo for a night out on the Sunday night. I was there on the Wednesday and on the Sunday night we were due to meet. And only one of the girls could make it on the Sunday night. So I'm so a bit nervous even just meeting one person, you know?
Yeah.
You think there'd be a little gang of you and that you, you know. So she was a lovely woman from Norway and she was all kind of spiritual. And this is so not me. So I was like, oh God, are we going to get on at all? You know, we were kind of chalk and cheese. But we got chatting then with so much in common.
Oh,
we started ranting about men, of course. That brings women together. She was actually there traveling with her son, who was only 16, and his friends. So they obviously didn't want to be with her. So she was only glad of a bit of company.
And did you just see her for one night or did you go out other nights?
That night we went out and me and her, we ended up having a ball. The minute we got to like the bars where the music was, we just let loose. We danced like no one was watching.
Great.
We didn't care. We were there with the youngsters. We didn't care. I think it was 4 o'clock in the morning. I got home that
night. That's what you want.
Because the bars stay open, the clubs stay open, everything stays open really late. The next night then, the other two girls could make it. So, and the Norwegian woman made it again. So the four of us met up.
Brilliant. So you kind of became a little gang almost.
Yeah, and I was out at 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's what you want.
Two nights in a row.
That's what you
want. I don't know how I did it. If I did it here, I'd be hospitalised.
And did
but
it?
We had a ball. We just had a great time. That was two English girls, the Norwegian and myself. So we just had
And that
an
was just meeting
ball.
Up over Facebook. Is that a tip
Through
you give
Facebook.
People? Like, how did you do that? Did you go on to Facebook pages or?
Yeah, there were so many Rhodes groups, but there was one for Falaraki in particular, which is the town I was staying in. And I just put up a post a few days before I went. I was saying, you know, if anyone's around that wants to have a drink or a night out, possibly karaoke, kind of, you know, because I do enjoy a night out, you know, a proper night out, but I wouldn't do a proper night out on my own.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you would kind of be worried safety-wise then, you know, if you'd a bit too much to drink or anything.
Of course.
So, yeah, a few girls just replied. We got in contact. We started a little group then on Facebook. So that's how that materialized.
Wow.
So one girl was only 25. The girl from Norway was 50. Another girl was 35 from England. You know, so we're a range of ages. So we all got on. So we're still in contact. Like, brilliant. We're still in the Facebook group.
Has it opened up your eyes to more solo travel?
Absolutely. All I'm doing now, I'm actually sick with COVID. I really got the full holiday experience. I brought home COVID with me. But so I've been sick the past week, and all I've been doing is looking up Love Holidays again and thinking about booking another. I don't think I can wait until next year.
Oh, isn't that amazing that it took you so long to get to that? But now it's really feel the fear and do it anyway, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, I'd go again in a heartbeat.
What would you say to people? So it sounds like booking stuff to do is a good idea if you're a solo traveler.
Yeah. That was I had the boat trips booked or planned before I went. I knew what days they were. I knew what times they were. I knew where I had to get, where I had to catch the boat, things like that. Like I said, just ask any silly questions, any random questions in all the Facebook groups, and they'll answer you. You know, where's good to eat? Where's nice to eat? Where's cheap to eat? You know, so absolutely. Like they say, Facebook is dead, but I mean, you can't do that stuff on Instagram.
No,
do you know what I mean?
You really can't.
Yeah. So the Facebook groups and stuff are great. Like, you know.
Okay.
And the whole Instagram thing really took off with me because, like, I do post a lot on Instagram, but I just kind of started posting stories about my holiday, and just other women especially were so invested in it then. But I really just, daily, I was putting up loads of stories and everyone was just like, I'm loving this, keep posting stuff. So it really kept me going and it kind of kept me company as well.
Yeah. Even at the start, what you were saying, like, we really do almost put ourselves into boxes, don't we? Like, the first thing you said was what age you were. Did you feel that this was for a younger person, like solo travel?
I kind of did. Like, I mean, like all the people on Instagram I kind of follow would be younger women doing it, you know, and they would tend to be more ballsy than my age. You know what I mean? I kind of think, I don't know why that is, but they're just like kind of live for the moment. Like, the younger generation are different to when we were that age.
Yeah.
They just seem to have their heads together. I think the women are a lot stronger, you know, strong minded. Yeah. And I love that. So I'm just trying to, maybe I'm a bit late to the party, but I just said, you know what? What am I waiting around for, you know?
Oh, well, listen.
And I'm still young.
Exactly. And it looks like you had just such a ball. And you can actually check out Melissa's photos from her trip to Rhodes if you want to find her. She is Melissa_was_ear on Instagram. And she's got lots of photos up there and lots of stuff from her big gym fanatic at the moment. I'm sure it's a lifetime.
I'm dying to get back to the gym now, in fairness. I just have to let my chest settle again.
But, it's hard.
I turned the old life around about 7 or 8 years ago as well, with training and stuff like
God
that. I don't know. A lot of changes in the last 2 years.
Well done. I loved watching your stories. I was so impressed. It's really great to talk to you about it. I'm sure you'll give lots of other people inspiration about solo travel as well. That is Melissa Welsh from West Waterford, and Melissa Was Ear is her Instagram. If you want to have a look at those photos, Melissa, thanks a million. I'll talk to you on the next trip.
Thanks so much, Orla. Lovely to speak to you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's Sunday morning. You are listening to Beat, and this, of course, is the Sunday Grill. And you'll know my first guest this morning, All Ireland champion turned entrepreneur, Walter Welsh. He's the 3-time All Ireland winner, and he's launched a new free platform which is called Social Ties. And he joins me this morning to explain all. You're very welcome, Walter.
Thanks very much for having me, Orla.
And we're going to talk, well, we'll attempt GAA talk now, Walter. I'm not very good at the GAA stuff. And I was going to say being from Wexford, but there's plenty of massive GAA fans in County Wexford, of course, but I wouldn't be one of them. So I'll hark back to 1996, perhaps, and that's all I could do.
Yeah, some great songs come from 1996.
I could definitely do the songs, but not much else. But Walter, you're very welcome. You retired from hurling back in November, is that right?
Yeah, so I retired after 12 years playing with Kilkenny. So it was a big change, but I'm enjoying retired life. And maybe after Kilkenny losing last weekend, it makes it a bit easier having retired, I suppose, knowing what the guys are going through after that defeat. So it makes it that bit easier.
What's it like to watch it rather than be in it?
Yeah, it's strange. It's a strange feeling seeing the guys on the field that I would have played with for so long, and I'm up in the stand. And yeah, it's just completely different. Mm. But it's enjoyable when they win, but obviously when they don't, it isn't. And you feel like you're maybe not as much of a part of it because you're not. You're out of the loop. And look, it was enjoyable, the Leinster final, but the All-Ireland semi-final, not so much.
Oh, I can imagine. And I suppose it's just like leaving a job where you get on really well with people, isn't it? It's kind of suddenly you're not in that gang anymore.
Yeah, it's life-changing, really. And look, I was lucky enough to have twins in the end of October now, and they're keeping me busy. So your life changes a fair bit as well, but they're definitely keeping me busy as well.
Oh, I can imagine. And was it a hard decision to make to retire? Like, was it something that was in your head for a couple of years, or was it a quick decision?
No, it was, well, when you lose, you kind of say, maybe that's it. Mm. Going back over the last couple of years, and it didn't really hit me until maybe after the club campaign. We played a game against Munkhine and we were beaten in the quarterfinal. And it was just then I said, I don't think I'm going back with Kilkenny. And it stemmed from that, really. Mm. It wasn't as if it was when we got beaten by Clare in the All-Ireland semi-final last year that mm-hmm. I said, oh, that's it for me. It was after that, which was maybe 2 months later, that I decided. And yeah, look, it was a frustrating year for me last year playing with Kilkenny. I spent 17 weeks out injured with my groin. I tore it off the bone, and it was just a lot of rehab, a lot of stuff doing on your own, and it wasn't as enjoyable. And I was lucky to get back for the end of the year, really. But I missed so much of it, and that was probably a factor in it too.
And time to think, of course, when you're out injured as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, plenty of time to think. So yeah, that can be a good thing or a bad thing. But yeah, look, I'm happy with my decision. And yeah, there's other things going on as well. And yeah, life goes on.
Exactly. Let's talk about these other things, because you are a teacher, but you're going down the entrepreneurial route now as well with this social ties platform that you've come up with. Has, you know, thinking of business has always been part of your life? Is that your kind of family background that you're a bit of an entrepreneur, or you have people in your life that do things like this?
Maybe not, no. So I come from a dairy farm in South Kilkenny. Okay. I'm actually in partnership with my father on the farm as well. I always had different ideas, and I suppose 4 or 5 years ago I started investing in tech companies. Mm. And I suppose it really is a stem from that as well. And I was teaching up until just end of May this year in Gilcounsel College in New Ross, but I've just took a career break from there. So I just want to give this a really good shot. And yeah, it's so far so good. All the feedback has been really good. And I suppose how I got involved in this platform, I was one of the first investors. Originally we were looking at club management software for local sports club clubs, but I suppose after that, then with Kilkenny GAA, we pivoted and we're managing the first app, which is Kilkenny Cat Social, and that's with Kilkenny GAA. And then Social Ties was formed after that. So I suppose Social Ties isn't just with Kilkenny GAA. Mm. We work with all county boards and national government bodies, schools, or any groups or communities. But our first one is Kilkenny Cat Social, and that has been really successful to date.
And how does it work? Tell us about it.
So there's three key stakeholders involved in Kilkenny Cat Social. First of all, there's the user or the supporter who download the app. So it's an app. So it's essentially, we provide a digital home for the organization. And what it is really is it's a one-stop shop for all things Kilkenny GAA. So I know from being a Kilkenny supporter now as well that I go onto the website for the fixtures and results. I go to Twitter or X for live updates, and I go to Instagram for just different content, and Facebook for that. This has it all in one place, and it has a news feed there. So it's really user friendly, and it gives the support or the user access to not only all the different social media platforms in one, it also gives exclusive podcasts and articles, and it's just everything for a Kilkenny GAA supporter will want. The second kind of key stakeholder in Kilkenny Cat Social, and she's using this as an example, this is more for all organisations, is the organisation itself, so Kilkenny GAA or the community. So Kilkenny GAA, they are constantly, I suppose, looking for sponsorship and different things like that. Mm-hmm. This allows businesses to advertise within the platform. So 50% of all ad revenue on the platform goes directly to Kilkenny GA. That's supporting the local center of excellence. And like, it's just giving more to the businesses. And I suppose for the businesses themselves who are advertising on the platform, you know, it gives them more of a return on investment. We provide analytics on, like we say, views and clicks. And you know, they're also growing the community. Instead of maybe advertising, let's say, on Facebook and Instagram and sending all the money to Silicon Valley, they're actually supporting local and helping the, in this case, the Kilkenny Centre of Excellence grow.
So at the moment, it's very much, I suppose, social media platform, one-stop shop for Kilkenny. But with Social Ties, you're hoping to branch out to other GAA clubs and counties.
Yeah, exactly. And that's we're in talks with other county boards at the minute as well. So I suppose other county boards are paying app developers to develop apps, whereas this is completely free and they can get revenue from it as well. So it's kind of a win-win situation for the organizations. They have nothing to lose by coming on board with us. In fact, they have a lot to gain. And it's not just for county boards. We're looking at national government bodies. We've GAA Handball signed up to our platform on Social Ties as well. And we're looking to get into schools and just any community. It's going to provide, I suppose, a safe community for all, to all things.
Sport,
everything. It just makes it safe. And it's,
and is there a way for people to talk to each other then as well on the app?
Yeah, there's a chat feature on it as well. We're looking at a forum-based setting as well, but we want to make it really safe so far. So that can be monitored, that can be switched on and off by the community or the organisation as they feel free. So that feature is there, so they can change it. So it's tailored to each organisation as well, whatever way they feel is best to run it.
So say if you're part of a handball club in Tipperary, for example, and you had a Social Ties app, you could only be on the handball one. You just can't be on everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you can't. You can pick your communities on it. So you decide, so I want to be on the handball one, I want to be on the Golf Ireland one. So you pick those and you have to be accepted into it as well. So it just means it's safer in that regard, especially if we're hoping to get into schools. It's so important that, you know, it's a safe space, because like schools now, there's like school plays, there's matches going on all the time. You know, that footage can be up on the platform as well. It makes it really engaging for the school and the pupils and parents and so on. It just makes it, I suppose, more unique and exclusive for the school as well.
Well, it's socialties.com if you want to have a look at it. And as it says here, it's about community members who are embracing their new digital communities. And, you know, that's an awful lot about, you know, there's a lot of communities where people are living in the depths of the countryside and mightn't see people from day to day, so they can keep in contact like this as well on Social Ties.
Yeah, it is. And it's all about growing communities and supporting local as well. Hyper-localized advertising is there's a lot of research showing that that's the future as well. And you know, most people don't want to support local. So even two in every three Irish consumers prefer supporting local as well. So it seems to kind of combine all of the, I suppose, the communities and the people and the businesses in the communities, and just helps to grow the community as well.
Well, it sounds like a great idea. Socialties.com is the website if you want to check out more. It is available on the Apple Store and Google Play as well. And if there are any like clubs or communities that are interested in having their own app within Social Ties, can they just get in contact there as well, Walter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can find us on any social media there as well. The website, you can make contact with us there. All the details are there. So yeah, we're there to help.
Great. Well, best of luck with it. It is socialties.com. That is Walter Welsh. Best of luck with everything and with your retirement and your new job within the world of entrepreneurship. Thanks a million for talking to me this morning, Walter.
Thanks very much, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill. You're listening to Beat. And if you love your interiors, you might like Easy Living's new podcast. It's called Style Stories. There's 5 episodes up there right now, and they are on Spotify, on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find it. And Style Stories take listeners on a journey through the latest interior trends, industry secrets and personal stories from some of the most captivating voices in design, arts, culture and lifestyle. And that sounds like a little bit of me. I love a bit of interiors. Their latest guest is Claire Vallely, and she has a great story behind her family rug business that she shares with her brother Paul. And she joins me to tell us more this morning on the Sunday Grill. You're very welcome, Claire.
Thanks very much, Orla. Delighted to be here.
I love talking interiors. Do you love this?
Absolutely. This is, I think actually when we done the Easy Living podcast, Laura had said to me, it'll be about an hour's recording. I think it was about 2.5 hours in the end by the time we were finished talking about the interiors. So yeah, it's one of my main loves in life.
Oh, and you know what? It's really taken off when it comes to social media. Like, my saved section is just paints and, you know, hacks on how to do stuff in your room, make them look bigger and smaller. It really helps the social media element, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Like, we bemoan social media a lot, and there is a lot of negatives around it in terms of expectations, but actually there's a lot of positives as well. Open interior design up. Yeah, I think everybody now is just a lot more confident with interior design themselves and having a go at it. They're finding images that they love online and social media and Pinterest, and then just converting that sort of the image into their own home, essentially.
So let's talk rugs, which is what you and your brother Paul do and have been doing for 2 decades. You are Cocoon Rugs. Mm-hmm. It's Cocoon with 2 K's, so K-U-K-O-O-N rugs.com if you want to check them out. And there's a bit of a family kind of generational background in a way to your company, isn't there?
There is, yes. Our dad sold rugs in the markets. So that's what myself and Paul spent our teenage years doing, is we'd have been going through Dublin Ferry House and Balbriggan and over to Clogher with him. And that's, you know, really learning the retail game sort of live in action. And then for most of my teenage years, it was rugs that he was selling in the market. So it would have been a little bit more, the early days would have been the carpet remnants, if you remember them, or it would have been the offcuts of carpets made into half moons and rectangles. And then eventually we've seen the rugs as we know them now, you know, the real sort of designed rugs coming into play. So it's lovely, a lovely transition story in terms of the early years were at the markets face to face with people, and then we took it online, essentially.
And you were using stacks of his unsold rugs, is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. We, at the very start, we kind of knew we'd wanted to have an online business. You know, it was 2006, that was the up and coming thing, and we could really see the potential in it. We weren't initially convinced that rugs would sell online because they're such a tactile product. People love to see it and feel it and touch it. And we were dubious, I would say, that you know, we could make a business selling rugs online. But that's what we had at hand. You know, Dad had built up a couple of, you know, bundles of rugs over the years that maybe hadn't sold so well for one reason or another in the markets. And we listed them online on eBay at the time, actually. And, you know, much to our delight, they actually sold really quick. And I think that's when we were like, there's something here. Just how do we go about building it into a business?
And what is it like, what rooms do rugs suit if people are like building a new house or they've bought a home? Where do you see rugs fitting into homes?
Yeah, rugs, I think, have changed massively over the last few years. And I think rugs now they're nearly linked as much as anything to fashion and to your identity. And people have become much more playful with rugs and cushions and accessorizing in general. So they're still investing in sofas and curtains, the big investment pieces, maybe keeping them a little bit more neutral, you know, likely to last a bit longer, shall we say. But actually rugs and cushions, they're being playful. They're aligning them to their identity, like the colours that they love, the styles, the trends, you know, the different medallions, very popular vintage medallions at the moment, and abstracts. And we're beginning to see geometrics now coming into play quite a bit.
Yeah,
so
I see you've got checkerboard rugs here, if people even imagine them, like the red and the white squares.
Exactly. And whenever we first talked about bringing them in, so the design team, you know, we were sort of presenting to the rest of the company, there was a lot of raised eyebrows because people are like, "That, what is that? That's a bit crazy." And they're some of our best-selling rugs. So
really? Again,
it just shows how playful people are being in terms of using sort of rugs as a way to add a bit of a colour or identity into a room. And we're finding now that they're in every room. Like traditionally, rugs were something you put in the middle of the living room, mm-hmm. and that was really it.
Yeah.
Now it's hugely popular to put them under the dining table, which mm-hmm. was really one of the bigger drivers for our washable collections. And the same with bedrooms, kitchens. You're seeing them in galley kitchens, you're seeing them in hallways, you know, they're just really everywhere at this point.
And they can really lift a room as well. I see one of your rugs has been featured in Grand Designs.
That's right, yes, our lovely Margot rug. That's part of our flat woven collection. And that, again, I think it's just a perfect blend. You know, everybody's loving the tonal decorating as well, like so the different shades of cream and beige. And that's a nice way of going into that tonal kind of area, but with a little bit of pattern as well. So that was one of the vintage medallions and obviously featured in Grand Designs, as customers have loved it.
And what about your own house? Are you filled with rugs?
I have rugs on rotation order, shall
we say. Oh, have you, lucky duck?
I do, yeah. Yeah, no, obviously having my pick of them is a dangerous thing in terms of I actually can't pick. So what I have, I kind of swap them out now seasonally. Like, and you're beginning to see people saying they're doing the same thing, where essentially they're putting a rug down maybe for spring and a different rug for autumn and winter, and in some cases maybe no rug over the summer if they're looking to mm-hmm. you know, freshen the place up a bit and get rid of some of the clutter for a couple of months, but then they're wanting to warm the house back up again in September and they're introducing the more autumnal kind of rugs. So I've been doing that for a few years now, and I actually just thought I was probably doing it because I couldn't pick between our own rugs, but we're beginning to find customers are doing the same thing. Like, they're, you know, and I think again, because you can fold the rugs up now, mm-hmm. you know, essentially in the past they were always something you had to roll, and quite heavy and bulky, you would have nowhere to put them, whereas now you can fold them and put them away. So it's I have rugs, and you're probably not going to be surprised, I have rugs in pretty much every room in the house. And
not the bathroom, I presume. Not the bathroom.
No, really? Definitely in the bathroom. Yeah. Again, it's but the washable rugs.
Well, exactly.
It's just completely opened it up now.
Yeah, and
that's something we've noticed. In the past, we would have had collections of bathroom rugs that were just your typical plain, shaggy, non-slip back. And people are now using pattern. So that flat woven collection that I was talking about in the soft washable, you know, they're quite vibrant. Some of them are quite colourful, and people are buying the smaller sizes for their bathroom. And you'll see on our website, we've shot quite a few of them in bathrooms,
okay.
Just to help people visualise what that's going to look like.
I just have the terrible college memory of there being a shaggy, you know, thing around the toilet that got more and more disgusting as the months went on. But times have changed.
They're changed. Yeah. No, it's no longer. We're not selling the 3-piece set.
No.
The matching toilet seat cover to go with it. No, we've moved past that.
And that is really great to see. And, you know, there's just so many trends out there. And I suppose this is why Easy Living have their new podcast called Style Stories. As I said, Claire is episode 5. So there's loads of episodes up there if you're interested in interiors and getting some advice like that. Rug advice from Claire from Cocoon Rugs. And that's Cocoon with 2 K's. .com if you want to check it out. Sorry, it's cocoonrugseven.com, and you'll see some lovely stuff there if you are in the market for a rug or just to get some inspiration for colours for your house. Claire, thanks so much for talking to me this morning.
Thank you very much, Orla. I enjoyed our chat.
I loved it. And if you want to check out Style Stories from Easy Living, you can just search for it there on YouTube and on Spotify as well. Hope to talk to you soon, Claire. Enjoy all those rugs and all that designing, and thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Five counties, one station. You're listening to Beat, and full disclosure now, Brian will be so surprised at this. I've never actually seen a Jurassic movie.
Joy, the Jurassic franchise is not something that I die for. You know,
I watched a lot of these clips, and I know I say this when I like things. I would watch this in 2 years' time.
Yeah. Well, if you've never seen a Jurassic Park movie,
this is the one. Because it's standalone. Well, no, because it's a standalone. You don't need to know the whole thing.
You don't need to know the whole thing, but if you're going to pick one from the Jurassic franchise, I think no matter if you if you're someone who thought this was the best movie you've ever seen in your entire life, you're still going to say watch the original one,
yes,
from 1993.
The Sam Neill one. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, look, as I said, this one won't freak you out, Jurassic World Rebirth, because it is a complete standalone. It's the eighth in the Jurassic World franchise. It stars Scarlett Johansson, Mahershala Ali. Jurassic World Rebirth takes you to a world that Brian is going to review and comment on and explain and then make a really easy joke about me living in the time of the dinosaurs as well. You just
I already did it on WhatsApp.
And I said, keep that till we're chatting, because that's really funny that you're a dinosaur. Right?
It's funnier when you say it.
Oh, it's not funny at all. Anyway, will we hear a clip?
No.
Let's do it.
I love that bit so much.
Every week. We're like our own troupe. Jurassic World Rebirth. Here we go.
Dr. Henry Loomis, this is Zora Bennett, our mission specialist.
Sorry, what mission?
This would be a medical breakthrough that could save countless lives. It comes from the largest dinosaurs on the planet.
Oh my God.
Fortunately for us, all these species exist in one isolated place. Can you be ready tomorrow?
I can guarantee your safety. I mean, more or less.
More or less?
He's your guy?
We're the best at moving things and people in and out of places they shouldn't be.
Loop up towards Barbados, avoid government patrol, but there aren't that many anymore.
Why's that?
No one's dumb enough to go where we're going.
That was Jurassic World Rebirth. Just a little bit of it. Scarlett Johansson is on the PR circuit and I am loving it because I love her. I just think she's brilliant. So beautiful. She's a great actress.
Oh, is she? Have you seen movies that she's in or something?
Yeah, yeah. You know the one that's set in World War II, that world I can't think of. It has Rabbit in its name.
Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit. I loved that.
I did too.
She was brilliant. I've seen her in loads of things, by the way. Anyway, talk us through this because I read about it and it got so confusing that I thought I'm just going to let Brian explain
this. What part
this.
Did you get confused on?
Where it was like 17 years on from this. This has happened and it's not a world for that. And I was like, nah, Brian can explain that.
Yeah, so it was like, it started off with two time jumps. I remember that being the main thing is like...
In this movie.
17 years ago, yes. And 14 years later or something weird like
and
that.
And back in 2010. Yeah,
and I was like, that's... What? Why did it...
So does this happen in the movie?
It was like 17 years ago and then 4 years later or something like that.
Yeah.
And then because it's set before... Jurassic World.
So it's set in between two movies,
yes.
Is it? Yes, okay.
Well, it's set in between the two franchises. So it's set in between Jurassic Park and Jurassic World.
Right.
So basically there's this spooky... Well, first of all, I'm going to be honest, right? In the first 2 minutes, I got so annoyed at this movie, it could not redeem itself.
Not like you. Okay.
So there, at the start, the very start of this movie, it's not a spoiler at all. At the very start of this movie, there's a fella with an empty Snickers wrapper and he leaves it fall... To put in a pin code to get in this big sealed door.
Yeah.
That wrapper goes into an air duct goes up into the air duct, which causes a blockage, which causes the whole security system to be rebooted, which opens the doors, which allow the dinosaurs to kill people.
I wonder how much Snickers paid for that.
I don't know, but it made me like, every time I see a Snickers now, I get annoyed. So yeah. I don't know what marketing they did there, but it was wrong. It was a bad thing. But it annoyed me so much because I was like, how can you be so dumb? You're wearing a protective suit.
You know.
Walking into a with an empty wrapper. He wasn't even finishing the bar.
Had he eaten? Did we see
it? Was empty.
Eat?
No, he didn't see him eating.
He
had it in his, the empty wrapper in his mouth, and this was like dumb to me.
Yeah, me too.
So
I get you.
From there, I was like, "Well, do you know the way in these kind of movies, you're like, you know, there's going to be people eating, and he gets eaten like straight away."
Yeah.
And
I was like, okay, yeah,
I'm on the side of the dinosaur now.
Did you recognize this character from other movies?
Nah, he's just a random throwaway scientist.
Yeah. All right,
but then. So that kind of was the intro to what I was... Okay, it's like set the sights low for me.
It was the prequel. It was telling you where you were and how this had occurred.
Yeah, so this big dinosaur is like, oh, this is very interesting. This dinosaur will surely be a threat throughout the movie.
Okay.
No, it wasn't, Orla. No, it wasn't. So the story is Scarlett Johansson, Mahershala Ali, and then Rupert, Jonathan Bailey and Rupert Friend and a couple of more go down to the island that they have to get these three samples, right? Rupert Friend is this kind of, Rupert Friend is like this rich guy and he's getting them to do it so they can make loads of money. Mm-hmm. Capitalism, you know?
Capitalism,
we love to see it.
We talk about it a lot.
It seems to be the theme of every movie that comes out these days.
Well, you know, there's a whole thesis there.
But so he gets Scarlett Johansson, who's like the best person ever. First of all, dinosaurs are no longer like this sacred thing. They're all over the city. They're like, they're causing a traffic blockage and everyone's beeping at it.
Okay. And it's 2027 at this stage.
It's
2031.
It's like 2012, 2014.
Okay.
Somewhere around that timeline. Right. Which, as we know, we were around back then.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs were not.
No.
For anyone that wasn't, dinosaurs were not around back then. Apart from Orla. But
I'm keeping stum. I'm so close to having a retort, but no.
You can have a think of one.
I'll have a think, old brain.
So he hires Scarlett Johansson to go. She's like this person who's great at missions, and they have to go get samples from these three different dinosaurs, one from the water, one from the sea, and one from land. Because the dinosaurs can cure cancer or something.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, you know, a very well thought out plot. It's like these dinosaurs have some secrets because they have a bigger heart. People can't get heart attacks or heart disease or something like that. And I'm like, that's kind of silly, you know? And so they get the team together, and then there's this whole thing where they get more money because they want more money because Scarlett Johansson wants to not have to work anymore because she's like a hitman for hire or secret agent person for hire type thing.
What? Which,
she's basically Black Widow.
She has a side.
She's like a Navy SEAL, ex-Navy SEAL.
Okay.
Something American, you know? We don't have those
here. And she's become jaded by her work.
She just wants to retire from it. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I know that trope.
Yeah. Relatable.
And you're on fire today.
So they get hired and they go onto the island, and at the same time that they're bypassing something that they said there's military, they have to get around the military because it's such a guarded area. Father with his two daughters and one of the daughters' boyfriend are casually sailing around the ocean, and their boat sinks and they need a mayday, and Scarlett Johansson's boat goes to help them. So now it's these children, because you can't have a Jurassic Park movie without children also being in jeopardy.
And do they get eaten? Of course not. Because you'd never do that.
You wouldn't kill the children.
In an American franchise movie.
Exactly.
Capitalism, yo.
Yes. So honestly, from there, it's just, they have to complete the missions.
Okay.
Guns.
You seem so bored by this.
I was bored in the movie as well. Like, it's 2 hours and 13 minutes. Not the longest film I've ever seen in my entire life. But it was just nothing. Do you mean, like, there was actually, do you know what's funny? There was one great scene, and everything I've seen online is talking about this one great scene where the T-Rex is in it.
Mm.
And the T-Rex tries to attack him in this, like, raft thing. And genuinely, I was locked in for that. And I thought that was great. And everyone was saying that, like, they don't, like, because it ended up being, like, these deformed dinosaurs was the main thing. That was the guy from the start. But, like, that comes in way later. So this thing where the T-Rex is there, and the T-Rex is still the goat.
Oh, like, of course.
Easily. And when they were, like, a comment I saw on Twitter was that when they're treated like an animal, that's just, like, it's a force of nature, it's way scarier than this abominable thing, like, you know?
Yeah.
So I agree. I thought that scene was actually really good.
Okay.
But
everything else, would we be black pudding it?
It's kind of his case of they wanted to make something crazy so they can sell the toys from it.
Oh, of course.
Which, ironically, they're like, the message at the end is, hey, don't listen to capitalism. But, like, also buy the merch. And if you go outside, there's a special bucket you can get to have your popcorn in.
There you go.
And you can, all these different things.
Mm.
So it's, I don't know, it's hypocritical.
Okay. That's black pudding it, so.
I would give it like a 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
or 6. 5.
Give it the 5. Okay. So that is Jurassic World Rebirth.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 black puddings out of 10. It is in cinemas. It's the big one of the summer, isn't it? It's the big summer one. No?
Superman is out.
Oh, when's that?
It's out now, actually.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet.
Next week,
I might go see it tonight.
Do that. We'll talk to you next week.
Maybe.
5 black puddings out of 10 for the dinosaurs.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.